the children are our future. Teach them well and let them lead the way. Show them all the beauty they possess inside.
Welcome back to the Early Childhood Leadership Academy podcast. We are sitting here today with Dr. Anita Pandey from Morgan State University in Baltimore, Maryland, and Jessica Ruiz, who is an Erickson alumnus, specifically a researcher in our HER Social Policy Research Center. Today, we are building upon a previous podcast with Anita specifically around the 30 million word gap. And in this segment, we're going to explore early childhood classroom assessments with respect to cultural and linguistic limitations and implications. And so in the last segment, we talked about what are the assessments used. And we specifically focused on language, even though these assessments cover all kinds of other areas and domains. But for the purpose of this conversation, we're focusing on language. If you guys can kind of talk a little bit to what are some of the limitations and implications of using classroom assessments that are focused on language within our early childhood programs?
Some of the limitations is that each observer comes with their own lens, their own experience, their own perception, their own background, their own expectations. So while a certified observer might be trained to be very objective, everyone comes with a covered lens into the classroom that might be a little bit blinding to what cultural aspects are particular to the teacher and the students and the family served. So I would say just one of the limitations is the lens that the observer wears when they come in to do an objective observation.
Yes, and in fact, Jessica has written about this through an example in a blog at languagebuildingblocks.com, where she gives a very specific example from the Latino community, specifically, would you say Mexican?
Yes, okay. The Mexican community.
And
yes.
She uses the example of how sometimes threats are used to ensure that the child recognizes the importance of what is being said, but they are not intended to create a negative climate. Am I right?
Yes. So mild threats within the Latinx culture are sometimes used to redirect behavior. And that's very natural within the family, for the parents and their children, and teachers who come from that community. But within these assessments, that could be considered very negative, harmful, and unacceptable, lowering the score of the teachers in that classroom.
Exactly. I remember talking with this little girl, and she pointed at the venado, the deer head, in her home, and she said, "Esto es el animal. This is the animal. Vas a comerte si vas a pipí en tu cuarto, en tu cama," saying that this is the animal that's going to eat you if you do pee-pee in your room or on your bed. And she said it very seriously, and I said, "Really?" And her mother said, "Sí." And so I understood that this was a form of ensuring, making sure that the child, you know, went to the bathroom before going to bed, followed the routines of the family. But just to give you an example of that threat-type language. But some other limitations that I want to touch on, specifically in terms of the phrasing and the language of this particular test, is that it gives us an incomplete picture of language. It is, for instance, as we talked about, very word-centric, and it's missing a focus on nonverbal language. A lot of the children are nonverbal, either because they haven't started articulating. We know that Einstein started talking much later, that helped create the Einstein syndrome. And, of course, there are sounds that children use that are not even necessarily integrated in the test. And also intonation. Intonation is part of that paralinguistic component that needs to be considered. However, interaction is one-sided. It is teacher-directed, and the stipulation given is that open-ended questions should be used, but the definition is that more than one word responses are needed, going back again to the word. But we know that open-ended questions are WH questions like who, what, why, where, that encourage critical thinking and that are not constrained. So this is one area that I wanted to mention. Also, this goes back to the behavioristic focus of directive language, which was in sync with the time when the test was created. But now we've evolved from that to more nativistic accounts of language acquisition. We also talked about the teacher-centric nature of it, because the teachers are held responsible for the students' level of interest and listening skills. And this poses a question about how valid is it? How can you hold a teacher responsible for a student's responsiveness or interactivity? Also, to go back to the culturally biased aspects, there is a mention on things like eye contact. Now, of course, if the teacher is making eye contact with the child, if the teacher is well-versed in the Western ways that eye contact is acceptable and a way to show respect, but in some cultures we know that eye contact is considered with the elderly person is considered disrespectful. So if you are an observer and you're trying to observe this, whose eye contact are you really looking at? And could you be missing that big picture? It's also very English-based in the sense that even though there is mention of a Spanish version of class, and I'll have Jessica. I can see Jessica wants to pop in.
Yeah, so I've been certified as an observer in the ECRS and the class for years. I didn't even know that there was a Spanish version of the class. Why? Because it's hardly really used within the classroom programs. Different programs who are applying for additional funding don't have access to certified observers who are bilingual, who can go into the classroom and use a Spanish tool. And actually within the instructional support domain of the class, when we're looking at language, when we look at language modeling as an observer, and you're using the English tool in a bilingual classroom, there's actually a note that reminds the observer if a teacher is speaking in both English and Spanish, dismiss the Spanish words,
wow.
Only focus on the English language. So while they market that they do have a Spanish version, which I don't know how many of us certified observers are aware of, they specifically remind you to only focus on English, and most of these observers are only certified with the English tool, but are using these assessments in bilingual, bicultural programs in classrooms.
Not to mention there's no room for code mixing.
Yeah.
How do you, score something that's code mixed? For example, limpiaring or vamos a comer, and now vámonos, let's go, or, you're code switching, but you're, especially if you're code mixing.
Yeah,
that poses a problem, but you wanted to
mention something. I just wanted to kind of, I think what's interesting, you talked about, Jessica, the lens that the observer has, but what you're also referencing is that the actual structure of the assessment has bias baked into it, because you're not allowed to evaluate or record any interaction outside of the English language or
That's
any
correct.
Exchange. And so I'm also curious, with the Spanish version, or just if you have a bilingual classroom that's using native language instruction and interactions, how can we apply an English tool to that?
Right. And there have been cases where observers are only English speaking, and they tell the teacher, I know you're a bilingual classroom, but only speak English today because I need to score you. I need to get your scores for the class.
So there's some serious implications with that. I mean, you're using tools that actually are not appropriate for the setting, yet the score can have some major implications.
Correct.
On how the teacher is evaluated, how the classroom is evaluated, and then if this goes into something like our Accelerate program.
Their funding depends on it.
Exactly. Okay. So
exactly. Yeah, it's a big issue, and it brings us to implementation as a limitation, because even the implementation is only 15 minutes maximum or more or less in a whole school year, and typically they advise you to only observe in the morning, and we know children's language changes, and even the instructors on time of day, depending on the setting or what they're doing, they're not getting a big picture, and there's no second rater, so there's no inter-rater reliability.
To be clear, certified observer is encouraged to do 10 to 15 minute cycles of observations. And I've heard of cases where state observers who are just inundated with different programs that they have to evaluate within a certain period, they only get to go in maybe twice, 10 minutes each round, to give the program a score that depends on funding. And that's it for the year. That's the rating that you receive for a year.
And Jessica, if you don't mind, could you share what happened when you were going through the certification and when your scores were not the same as the other folks? What happened in that situation?
So when I trained with the authors of the ECRS, we would come back and meet and discuss some of our scorings and our own expectations of what the score should be. And there were periods where we didn't agree on if, saying playing soccer outdoors was safe or not for young children. And depending on who the lead observer was, either we would debate and go back and forth to come to an 80-90% range within scoring, or we just wanted to pass and receive our certificate. So, and that's not for me personally, but some would just go with whatever the lead observer would say and just rate the classroom and the teacher at the lower rating which the observer had expected.
That's true. But I understand that Eckers has multiple language varieties, like it's being used in Germany, so they have a German version. However, the multilinguality of these tests needs to be enhanced. They need to be more culturally inclusive for U.S. applications as well, and of course international applications.
Great. Thank you. This has been really provocative discussions and thoughts. And so I'd like to close this segment and invite you to continue listening to part three, in which we will talk about what are our potential solutions for improving early childhood classroom assessments, because I think this is a great segue now that we've kind of laid out the implications.
I believe the children are our future. Teach them well and let them lead.